To be a boss is not easy. You are a leader, you're making decisions, and not everybody will like them. And to accept that you're not going to be liked, it's hard, because we want everybody to like us, and we think we are fair, and we try to be fair, but some people don't think the same way as you, and you need to be ready to take that.
Welcome to episode 75 of the Frank Online Marketing Show. I'm Temma Frank, and pleased to be your host. Today's episode is a little bit different from some of the others. I was part of a panel a couple of weeks ago where we weren't focusing specifically on digital marketing, but rather on what we called the good, the bad, and the ugly of entrepreneurship. And I know that a lot of you are entrepreneurs, so I thought, well, this could be something interesting. Even if you are working in somebody else's company and you're not an entrepreneur yet yourself, you still may well find some real nuggets in here. The panel was moderated by Edmonton entrepreneur and business coach Pam Robertson. And the panelists consisted of Kim Franklin, who is the co-owner of the High Level Diner here in Edmonton, and who founded the business 25 years ago, and it's still going strong. Katie Pierce, who is a former student of mine when I was teaching e-marketing at the University of Alberta. And at that point, she was working in a large organization that, much to her frustration, was not taking the web very seriously, and she was a web designer. She discovered she could earn a heck of a lot more money cleaning houses than designing websites. So, of course, being the entrepreneurial type she is, it wasn't long before she wasn't cleaning houses. She was managing a staff of people cleaning houses. So her company, Green Clean Squad, has been doing very well. Mariana Consolos, who you've probably heard me talk about before, she's a big mentor of mine in terms of entrepreneurship. She just has such a natural talent for it. And she is the founder of a company called Princess Florence Handbags and More. She's an immigrant from Uruguay who came to Edmonton knowing only the man who she had met on the internet and was about to marry and barely speaking English. And she now runs a thriving business and, in fact, was shortlisted for a Women of Distinction Award in Entrepreneurship. We were at the ceremony for that last night. And, of course, I was the final member of the panel. During the interview, we talk about things like the importance of surrounding yourself with positive people, the challenge of work-life balance, and whether we entrepreneurs even really want to have work-life balance. We also talk about staffing and management challenges, which I think are some of the biggest challenges that entrepreneurs face. Towards the end, we were asked a question about exit strategies and had some rather different answers from one another on that. So I hope you enjoy the interview. I'll chat with you very briefly at the end because it's a long one. But if you'd like to have more entrepreneurship type interviews, just let me know. Send me an email, Temma, T-E-M as in mother A, at frankonlinemarketing.com. The episode starts with entrepreneur Kim Franklin talking about one of her early mentors.
He had had his own restaurant previous to that. And I really relied, I think I relied on him in many ways to verify my feelings or what I thought needed to happen. And we would discuss things. And then I realized, you know, and he basically gave me the confidence to understand that I already knew what had to be done. I mean, I was doing it, but I was a little unsure. But at the same time, I knew that every task that when we were setting up the business and we were trying to figure out how it was going to operate, and there wasn't really one thing that I hadn't done previously because I'd worked in so many places and I'd been in a baker and I'd done this and I'd done that, that I knew, but I think that the one thing that he did give me was the feedback that in fact it was correct. Yeah. And I think at that point I needed that. I needed someone to just reassure me that it was going to be okay. And then when we opened the doors and, you know, it was like we were busy right away. It's like, oh, wow, you know, this works. You know,
there's another confidence shot.
No, you kind of, you know, and everything that happened after that, there wasn't really too many things that I was totally unsure of. But it was nice to have that person in the background just to say, you know, what do you think of this? Or it, just to give you that little bit of reassurance. So,
great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And many of you have probably heard the adage, you know, we are the five people that we surround ourselves with. Sometimes that's attributed to one guru, and sometimes it's attributed somewhere else. I don't know where it came from. I did go looking one time. But we really do need a very, very strong support system around us. And if people are not being helpful, and you've already heard people say that, you know, sometimes somebody criticizes me or isn't helpful, or you're going into business, you're doing what? And you're going to hear that a lot, okay? You're going to hear that a lot, especially if there isn't somebody in your inner circle who's been in business for themselves, or they come back to you and they say, are you going to get a job? So, and they do it from a very loving, supportive place most of the time. They just don't want you to be hurt or hungry or whatever it happens to be. So we have to look at those people that we are forming those bonds with, and sometimes when they're people that don't help us, that's the hardest thing, right? Is letting some of those people go, or making yourself unavailable, or however it is that you happen to do it, to make sure that you're linking with people who support you and love you and guide you and can actually be that mentor. And you have to look hard sometimes, clearly. But that's where you're sticking up for yourself and saying, it just isn't right for me.
Can I add something that you know, in one of the podcasts Tema has, she interviews the guy from Shopify. That is a great interview. I think everybody should listen to that. And one of the best tips he says, and I apply it, is like, if you admire 10 people, invite them for coffee. If one of them answers yes, you got a mentor for life.
Yeah.
And if you don't ask, you won't get nothing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, if you see somebody around, don't be shy. Phone and ask, like I did with Teresa Spinelli when I was in my first stages of hiring people, staff, and I didn't really know how to deal with it. I just said to Tema, I admire, you know, Teresa is opening a new store, and she's hiring more. She has 300 people, and she's, how she does it? So she said, you won't know if you don't ask her.
So Teresa Spinelli, for anybody who doesn't know, owns the Italian shop, which is now 3 stores, right?
So I phoned her, and she said, come for coffee. As easy as that. And now we are texting every time I have an issue with the staff. And, you know, isn't that cool? So that's what I'm saying. I always put myself available, because I went through things that maybe you will never go, because I struggle with languages, I struggle with culture, I struggle with other things. So ask me. I'm available. You know how many times I said that, and I said to Tema, I never got a phone call?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be calling.
People are afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Right? They're a little bit afraid.
Yeah.
Or sometimes, especially when we want a confidence booster, we need some kind of validation. We think, oh, I shouldn't be bothering them because they're so busy, or they're so successful, I can never have that. But you know what? We're all putting our pants on one leg at a time. And then moving forward.
The ask is so important, and the opportunity. And Jack Canfield was just here 2 weeks ago on Good Friday, and did a workshop, and I attended because I trained with him. But everybody left, and Jack was just putting stuff in his briefcase. So I went and said to him, Jack, what are you doing tonight? And that's when we had all that snow. So he was. He says, nothing. You want to have dinner? So I spent 2 hours having dinner with Jack, and he paid. Like, he teaches. If you ask somebody out for dinner and they say no, what's the big deal? You weren't going for dinner with them before anyway. I learned it well. And
good
I imagine.
You.
Imagine the value of that dinner.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow, and, but you know what? It was just two people having dinner.
Yeah.
And he's got, because I did train the trainer with him and stuff, he told me they've got new stuff coming up that they want to do with us and that. But otherwise, he's a grandpa now. So we had to talk about. And he showed me his baby pictures. And
Personal side of him.
Like real companionship and an enjoyable dinner.
I noticed actually there's a conference going on tomorrow, the Alberta Entrepreneur 2014. And one of the... somebody from Shopify is speaking.
Yeah, there are actually two from Shopify.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat. Shopify is kind of a cool company. If you haven't looked at it, it's a way that you can sell.
I tell you, after spending so much money, I found the right fit. Good. And much cheaper.
Good, so
it's an e-commerce online store platform.
They have a really cool way that they hire people, by the way, because my son applied for a job and he had to do a video, so there he is with his video camera all set up. It's a cool little pitch. Yeah. It's very cool. So interesting company. Very interesting company.
Canadian.
Yes. Let's talk about some of the stories that we hear. Are you up for some stories? So what are some of the common myths or misconceptions about being an entrepreneur that, we should enlighten people with? I'm thinking, you know, about that one where they say, oh, you make it look so easy. It must be really easy to own your own business.
Yeah, right. You know, I was at a conference and Ruth Kelly, the... You know,
venture
magazine. She said, when somebody comes to me and said, oh, I'm waiting to open my business so I can go late and I can work late. She said, I know that that person will fail for sure. Yeah. I'm not sure who told her she can be an entrepreneur. Yeah. So that is really truth, you know. If you do it because you think you're going to make more money and you think you're going to workless, and I think the only way a business will survive is if you have passion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're after the service you give, and then the money will come. But if you're after the money, it will never come, the service. Mm-hmm. So that is my true believing.
Well, and that was kind of what I was thinking too, and I was thinking back to that entrepreneurship course in 1970 something, and you know, we did this little quiz on whether you have the traits of an entrepreneur, and I fit in all except for one, and that one was, it said, driven by money. Money is the focus. And I spoke to my prof and I said, but that's not me. Sure, I'd like to earn money, but that's not why I want to do this. And he said, no, I think you can be an entrepreneur anyway. But the funny story is, a few years ago, he was in the newspaper for having embezzled from clients. So I think he was driven by money.
He got all the yeses on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, too, because as they look at entrepreneurs setting up their businesses, so the baby boomers had one focus. Their parents had another focus. Generation X is not as connected to money. Generation Y, even less so. And the millennials, they get
count on their parents.
Yeah, but then there's a lot of baby boomers that count on their husbands. So I'm looking at that.
Okay, touche.
But a lot of the millennials and Generation Y, they couldn't answer the money question because they create an idea and they figure it out and they percolate it and they're in business. And yet they're making bucket loads of money at the same time, but it was never the focus. Mm-hmm. It's just there. Because we have to be making money. We have to be able to sell in order to have a business. So other myths?
I have actually a question, really. I kind of struggle with this. Like, what do people consider an entrepreneur? Like, is it just, like, that's, because I don't know. Like, I don't know what it's supposed to be. And sometimes I think,
you are. I am, but I don't know what it means.
When I wrote the manual, we discussed this a lot because it's a good thing to look at. Am I a business owner?
Yeah.
And is that the same as an entrepreneur or is it different? And there is a bit of a line in terms of mostly defined around risk and our acceptance of risk and money. So a business owner, for example, typically puts less of their money at risk than somebody who's an entrepreneur. So typically, as an entrepreneur, you've got it all in the bank, or with the CRA, or you got nothing. Right? And we're okay with that because we know that, okay, if things are really lean because it's January and nobody's come to me until February, I know that it's going to pick back up, and we're okay with that. So an entrepreneur can kind of ride, whereas an owner needs it more like this.
That's so with my that, question. I would say, because what I think is, one of the myths is this whole balance thing. And I think, I just read Arlene Dickinson, is that her last name? Yeah. I just read her book, and I was just reading that chapter about how that's kind of the myth, and that's why I'm thinking about it. But it's like, it's, I don't feel like I have much of a balance that way, especially in the early years. There was no time for dating, for anything. It was just me at that computer and me cleaning in the beginning as well. I didn't have that. So I think, I mean, perhaps there's different degrees of entrepreneurship, but I don't know if there is.
Well, I don't know that entrepreneurs have balance. I guess that's part of it. Like, yeah. I think in the psychological...
Because you are your business. That
yeah,
is you.
Yeah, psychological...
You are the business, and the business is you.
Yeah.
In the psychological aspect, when we look at life-work balance, we often want to trade. Okay, I've worked for 8 hours... Now I want my 4 hours of evening, and then I'm going to have my 8 hours of bedtime. Whereas when we're entrepreneurs, it's all connected. So, I can create a frenetic level of balance that suits me just fine. Like, I have no issues if I'm working at 6 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock the following morning. I'm cool with that. I'm okay. That fires me up.
Me too.
Yeah. Because I know at some point I'll leave. It's totally fine.
One day.
Other people, their focus is I need 2 hours for a pedicure every 2 weeks, and I need 4 hours at the beach, and so I can only work 6 hours every third Wednesday.
That's
okay. That's okay.
But you're not an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But they're not an entrepreneur.
No. But you know what? But you want a pedicure with a soup with a
with a phone. Yeah, that's right. That's
I'm
not
true. I'm driving down the highway today. I need a hairdresser.
I'm glad you pulled over.
Yes, because
yeah,
I know
right.
about
yeah.
that safe driving.
Yeah.
The midwife thing is very difficult, and I think especially because most of us are women, it's pretty cold. But you have young kids, so you'll get it.
Yeah.
When we have families at home, especially, we struggle with that maybe even more.
Oh, yeah.
Or with aging parents, we're also struggling with it, because my parents, I work from home. Mm-hmm. Can you come out and put the air conditioner in for me?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can you take me to the doctor's appointment? Mm-hmm.
You don't
okay.
work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you don't have a job.
Yeah.
So the balancing comes up, but our comfort level with balance is what dictates what it looks like for us.
Can I comment on balance?
Yeah.
Because I don't believe in balance. I think that balance is what I try to find all the time. That is my biggest struggle in life, you know, to try to balance food, to try to balance travel, to try to balance, you know, everything.
Yeah.
It's a struggle, but that's what moves me. That's my gas, you know, that's what it drives me. I'm trying to find balance, and that's where I'm moving and trying things. I'm doing this and that. And sometimes I'm better mom, and I'm better wife, and I'm a better worker, I'm a better boss. But I'm struggling. And if I tell you that it's not, that I found my balance and I'm
And I think that's why I'm saying, like, we all have our own balance meter. Like, I like working flat out and working hard. And then I like the flexibility. And here's the flexibility piece, right? So one day last week, my sister said to me, somebody put a bluebird on Twitter, the bluebirds are here. And I'm a bit of a birdie, I can't help it. So the next morning, we just ditched everything and we went off and went bird watching for 4 hours.
And we didn't find any.
We didn't find any bluebirds. But that's okay, they're coming, they're coming. But
you see, but you get all the time.
Is energy, right? It's fun. So it's not that it has to be.
Of course,
it
match
was
up
be.
Till 2.
Yeah.
You get all the time online, you know, people say, how do you do so many things?
Yeah.
How can you manage all that? And for me, it's like, it was a slow day.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I don't know what to do anymore.
I think we should have a special club for all of us who are up at 3 and
4. I would love to have some company.
I just quit fighting it.
Yeah.
Because I love to bike. I love to be outside. So in the summer, I enjoy the day and then I work at night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I quit fighting it. I do what I have to do, like return calls or whatever. But you know what? I quit my job so that I could have 2-hour lunch hours.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I'm working any less. It just means I'm working in a different
way. Right.
And I don't look at it as, oh, poor me. I look at it as,
How great is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and I can go and I can write my blog.
Yeah.
And then I can sleep till 9. Mm-hmm. And then I get up, I work out, I may work for a couple hours, and then, you know, go for a bike ride or meet someone for lunch. And my meetings are always about Fabulous at 50.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's no boundary. Anybody that succeeds, you look at professional athletes, you know, anybody. Balance? Seriously, that let everything in moderation. Oh, that's a bunch of funk. I mean, if you're okay with that, that's okay. But to really truly be passionate and successful, that moderation thing, you don't become a good artist by being a moderate. You don't become a good runner, a good athlete, a business person, a good mother, a good anything by moderation.
Yeah, you go hard.
And we should
add. And when you're tired, you rest.
Sometimes
because you crash.
Yeah.
I worked a 10-hour shift yesterday with the RCMP. Then I went and met Pam. I said, I'm having a cup of chamomile tea so that I can sleep tonight because I have to go to...
We were meeting for 1 hour.
It was several hours. And then I got home and less than everybody went to bed and I woke up. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm still doing, well, maybe I'll do this in my workshop. Well, maybe I'll do this. And maybe I'll pack my car.
I call that creative time. Like, I wake up at 4 o'clock.
Silence, no one's bothering you.
I
get so much done.
I have a book that's thick called my I Will book, and it's filled with ideas that come up from that time or when I'm walking. I have to have complete silence.
Yeah.
And you can't get that during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's why I love to be up at 5 o'clock, actually, because it's quiet. Not that, I mean, I live with my sister. It's not that we're noisy, right?
But it's just quiet. It's not the noise there. It's the outside.
Yeah, it's the phone ringing.
It's so nice to walk, really. Yeah. I have no fear of walking at night. 4 o'clock in the morning, going for a walk. But you know, having shift work, I used to working night shift. I go for a walk then, and sometimes somebody come with me. But I have no fear in that respect. So, but that's quiet time. Like when I find everybody at home, I just want quiet. Like go to bed. I can do what I want to
do. Are there other aspects to these myths or misconceptions that people have?
I just wanted to add something. I think it's important because it took me a long time to understand. To be a boss is not easy.
Mm-hmm.
You are a leader. You're making decisions and not everybody will like them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And to accept that you're not going to be liked...
Mm-hmm.
It's hard
because
we want everybody to like us and we think we are fair and we try to be fair, but some people don't think the same way as you, and you expect from people things that for you are
normal
or really you think that they are and they are not. So you need to understand that being an entrepreneur, being a leader, being in front of a group of people, you're going to be also hated. And you need to be ready to take that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was one of the hardest things for me when I started to run a group of people. Not everybody will like me. And not everybody would agree with the ways that I do things.
As long as I found, because I've got, you know, always had lots of staff, and my whole day is a juggling act between I'm trying to make all these people, the staff have to be happy, the customers have to be happy, the suppliers are happy. Like you're always, it's all people all the time. And with staff, I mean, I'm trying to be fair. I try to be as totally fair as I can. I try to make sure that everybody gets as many parts of their needs met. But I'm honest too. You know, if there's often scheduling issues, and I've got lots of students, I can work this day, but it has to be this time. I have to be home by this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got like, you know, I've got a schedule. I've got like 20 people. I'm trying to juggle this all. And often I'll say, you know, like I've got in June, I already know, June 25th weekend, I've already made it very clear. Darren and Rachel are getting married. This person's having that. So you that normally go to the North Country Fair can't go. But I will try to find somebody to work. You know what I mean? I'm constantly trying to make it work.
And juggling.
And juggling it. And people appreciate that. The fact, I mean, I'm I'm trying to be fair, but I'm also honest that maybe I can't pull it off.
Yes.
But I have pulled stuff out of my hat.
Yes.
I don't know how it happened, but, you know, it just happens. But you try to do as much as you possibly can for your staff. And then they will appreciate you at least. But there are times when it doesn't matter because everybody wants what they want.
Right. Yes.
And, of course, their needs are the most important.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Don't you know? So it's tough. I mean, it's true. There are oftentimes, you know, when I put the schedule, everyone's kind of... Because I've been equally fair at making sure that nobody gets what they want. You know what I mean? Like, everybody, okay, then, you know, we have to cut back. So everyone's getting cut equally.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's sometimes it's tough. It is tough.
But you need to know that in your privacy, when you're doing that schedule, you're trying to be fair. And if you are convinced that you're really good with yourself, then the rest you cannot manage. People will be unhappy, you know, people might not think the same way as you. They don't see the big picture as you see. They don't see that, you know, sometimes I send somebody and they don't want to be in that cell. If I don't have those cells, I cannot have this other person in the job. And they don't know that. But I do know that.
Mm-hmm.
So they might not understand all what it's behind, and that's okay. Now I'm in peace with me because I do know, and I do know that I do my really, really, really best to keep everybody because I know they have families, I know they are feeding people. I love to take people who need help, so, you know, I hire people that they're coming from different countries. So it's harder because it's not that, you know, somebody you say, okay, goodbye, and, you know, that's okay. They have big, heavy commitments behind them.
So maybe you could each mention that too. How long do your people stay with you on average? So we often talk about turnover rates, right? How long do people stay before they quit? Or how long do they stay before they quit in their head? And then before they but how long do your people typically stay with you?
So we have core people that they stay, well, my experience is short. I have Alice for 5 years. I have Sharon for 3 years. Kika for 2 years. And the rest of the people, and Vicky for 2 years. And I think the rest of the people is like more fluctuating. So
shorter,
the key people stay. Because I think at the end of the day, when you hire, and this is something that I learned, I don't hire for skills. I hire for attitude.
Mm-hmm.
If they are in the same page as me, if they are family oriented and they understand that we are family and we're going to work together and we're going to try to do the other things, they will learn eventually. And it might be harder because in my case, I hire people who come from different cultures, different languages. So it's harder. It takes extra time. But I think they deserve it, as I did deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that once they stay with me, they commit. And they are very, very super loyal with me. So,
and then they're a little more flexible, right? And a little more understanding when you need something and come to them.
Yes.
What about for you, Kim?
We've got staff that have been there almost from the beginning, and quite a lot. I mean, we have a lot of staff that have been there well over 20 years. I mean, it's unheard of, really, in our business.
When you think about transient, the restaurant business typically is. Which says a lot for who you're choosing and who you're bringing.
Well, and these are like my kids. They really are. And a lot of them, I mean, and the same with Mariana. We hired a lot of refugees, Vietnamese refugees, when they came. They're still with us, you know, 25 years later. I've hired whole families of people, brothers and sisters. I've had, you know, there was a lady that I met. I hired all of her kids. And, you know, one of the things, too, if I like you, I probably like your friends. That's the way I look at it. And it's true.
Yeah.
Almost invariably. Well. If I like you, I like who you hang out with. And and so I get a lot of staff that are recommendations of somebody that they know. And a lot of them stay.
And that's an industry that's fairly transient.
Very transient.
Students who are servers are probably coming and going. And you probably, I would think, see that in your industry too, right?
Staffing was definitely our biggest issue the first 3 to 4 years.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. And that's the thing. Everybody wants a cleaner. The same cleaner every time, you know, they want some really, you know, cheerful, well, not a lot of people want to clean. So, and they don't want to clean for a long time. A lot of people think, oh, that's something that's easy, like babysitting or something. I'll just do that until I get a much better job somewhere else. So we struggled a lot with how to pay them, how to, you know, what kind of incentives to offer, what to do. Mm-hmm. And we luckily figured out, finally, you just pay them a lot of money. You find a benefits program, which is what we did. We start offering health benefits, very comprehensive ones. And now I have people that stay with us like 3 years. Before, it used to be, I would say like 90% of it was turnover within like 3 months.
Yeah.
There was not, and you're to blame, right? You're always to blame. Mm-hmm. And I just want to touch on that really quickly, because I was thinking as I was listening to you ladies talk, was just in terms of the myth too, I find you kind of got to check your ego, because nobody thinks you're great. At least I find, like, my clients don't meet me. All they know is I email them or I send them an invoice, or, you know, they can complain to me about something. Nobody seems to think that I have anything to do with my staff when they do a great job and they're really happy. And then, but if my staff do a poor job or they miss something, that's all my fault, right? So there's not a lot of appreciation, I find. So I would say that you have to find something very intrinsic with what you're doing in order for it to really be rewarding
for you.
Yeah,
and so I think that taps into the passion Mariana talked about.
Yeah,
it's same in my business. Unless I muck something up, they pay their bill, I hear nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if I want feedback, I'm going to them.
Yeah.
And mine's totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different.
I wanted to say, people say, I love my prayers. Yeah. Commenting on it.
Yeah. And that's the one thing in our business that you know every day. Whether you did a good job or not. Yeah. You know it right then, right there.
Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah.
And there's something wonderful about that. Mm-hmm. It's the same like hairdressing or something. I mean, you know, those kind of
instant reward.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's nice.
Yeah. For me, every time that somebody walks in the store and it's like, this is a candy store, you know, that is like, okay.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Something
oh,
good.
Yeah. My granddaughter says this is a sparkly store. Tamma, did you have something?
Well, I have just worked with contract workers because of the nature of the sort of business that I've had. But they've certainly stayed with me as long as I wanted them with me, which has been, you know, in some cases, several years. I had one absolutely wonderful woman who worked with me for several years. When she started, she had done a diploma. She had some kind of post-secondary diploma, but had been having trouble getting work, and I took her on. She was absolutely amazing. And after 3 years, I said to her, you can do better than this. Like, you know, it's time for you to spread your wings.
Yeah.
And I helped her get a better job, and her career is launched. And I feel a great deal of pride about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, okay, admittedly, that was when the business was starting to run into financial trouble, and so there, it wasn't purely being generous, because I realized that it might be dicey
for
her. But you're
still looking out for her.
But I really wanted her to succeed. And, you know, and we're still in touch. But then, you know, there have been mistakes that I've made sometimes where, you know, I hired somebody and then had to end it. And, like, as you both, that's a very painful thing.
Yeah. One other thing we did, which I started doing, is to selling shares to some of the staff.
Yeah.
So now I'm not the major shareholder anymore, actually.
Mm.
My partner in the kitchen is now the major shareholder.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So in theory, you work less. That hasn't happened yet. It actually hasn't happened yet.
That's a plan later.
But I mean, over time, you know, I'm thinking of how at some point there are other key people there that I really would like to reward and should stay, and at some point I should go.
So you mean you'd like to retire someday?
I'm thinking that. I don't know what I'd do, but I do think, I mean, there are people there that I finally found someone that I think can do my job.
Oh,
yeah,
good.
Except
good
she just got pregnant, so she'll be
maybe that's something as we enter into sort of a winding up sort of phase. Do you have an exit strategy? And do you need to have an exit strategy come in? Because there's two schools of thought, right? Some people say, if you're going to start a business, make sure you have an exit strategy so you know where you're going and how you're going to get. And then other people say, well, don't, because you'll give up. So do you have an exit strategy?
I come from a family of entrepreneurs,
which
they didn't quit yet in their 80s. They're not planning to quit. And in our immigrant mentality, there is no quit when you're doing something you're having fun. So I really don't plan. I really don't think that I should think about. You know, we talked about this last time. Retirement was not a word in my dictionary in Spanish. I got it in English because, you know, that's what everybody talks here. When are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? Everybody wants to retire. And I was wondering why everybody wants to retire. I was like, it's so sad to see so many unhappy people that they're looking forward to their day to finish what they're doing. Yeah. So I really don't think about retiring. I think I will never retire. Maybe I will make it smaller. Maybe I will make it different. Maybe I will change some things. But
no. Maybe I'll come work for you.
Yes, you can manage it.
Oh, no.
But you see, we did the experience. We are doing the experience this year to go away more.
Yeah.
So I need to say that I have a wonderful team, and they manage great, and I'm super happy. So, yes, I think it's possible. I think that's another thing that it's important to delegate. Yeah. We start this business as small babies, and we protect them and don't want to let go nothing, and we think our way is the only way. I think it's very important to grow as an entrepreneur and get to the point that you accept that there are other people can do it different and even better, and surround with people who are capable of doing different things that you can't. You know, I wasn't trained, so why not to pass the photograph to Gerardo when he's an expert, you see? Or Sharon was a stage manager in the Philippines, so why not to pass her all that? So now that I finally detach myself, you know, I let my baby fly. I think it was a process together with my daughter when she left.
Yeah.
So when I let the two go, I can see the people, first of all, blooming.
Rise to the challenge.
Yes. Because they overcome the challenges and they start to understand more or less what's going on. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, I'm more free, which is also
kind of cool.
Yes.
And so, Kim, your exit strategy is maybe sell more shares or?
I'm kind of trying to figure out how I would do. There are two people actually that I think I would like to sell shares to. They don't know that yet, but. But I mean, I've always kind of thought, I mean, for me, money has never been the deal. I mean, when we opened up the restaurant, there was nothing I would not have done. There was no amount of work I wouldn't have done to make it a success. That was my total focus. It was my total drive. That was the only thing that I was interested in. And then once it was successful, I looked around. I was in my 20s. I'd already accomplished what I had set out to do. And I thought to myself, so...
Now what?
But also, it wasn't, the money was there, but that wasn't enough. That didn't fulfill me. So how could I use my business to fulfill other parts of me that were, I felt had something? And part of it was, who do I hire? How do I live my life? How can I benefit the people who I work with? And so, I mean, I've always had a bit of a social work bent to me, so there was a way of structuring my business to fulfill other aspects of my life, and so I've done that right through, and that's probably part of the reason we've kept staff is because these are my kids now. I'm the old lady, you know. It's like, oh, you'll actually pick that up for me, you know. That's really nice. But and so now I'm looking at. Usually I'm hauling. Now it's like, oh, you'll pick up. You'll carry this for me. Oh. Anyway, so
go with that.
So now, you know, there I still feel that I want to help people. I mean, and I can do that even a little bit more seriously, hopefully.
Great. I would love to stay doing this forever, and I think for me, retiring would just mean passing along the parts of the business that I don't enjoy, like the invoicing or dealing with a complaint or some those sort of things, giving that to experts. Otherwise, in terms of marketing and web design, I want to do that forever. So
but how will you wind it up? So when you look at the cleaning company, Eco Cleaning Squad,
what will you do with that company? Would you sell it? Would you wind it down? Probably?
No, I would. No, I wouldn't sell it. I hope I could. I hope I could pass it along. I don't know. I guess hire like managers or something. But I would never. I would never know.
Own it. Have a different way to do it.
Yeah.
Right? They may sell it. They may have their staff buy into it.
Yeah.
They may want to wind it down and actually close
yeah.
it. So it's
no.
It's interesting to see what.
Yeah.
I think at your stage, it's so
Tamara,
hard.
What about
to
yours?
Think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
I'm actually quite different from the others here because for me, the excitement is the building of something and the creating of it. And then if I can get it to the point where it's running reasonably smoothly, I want to start something new. And so my goal is to get whatever business I am running to the point where I can spin it off, whether it's selling it. I mean, with Web Mystery Shoppers, my ultimate goal was hopefully to sell it to a larger company or something. But because for me, the excitement was, wow, I've got this cool idea and I want to bring it to life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once the kids grow up, I'm happy to let them fly.
Well, something to think about whether you have it and you decide, okay, yeah, I want it to go forever, or I'd like to just have somebody else take it on, or what have you, working that into your plan or looking at, you know, in the next 5 years, what I'm going to do, or 10 years, or 15 years. It has a bearing on how you're going to set up your plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing. Are you building and building momentum, or are you kind of coasting, or how you continue to handle that? So, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. All right. And I just want to thank all of you so very, very much for opening your hearts, for opening your minds to sharing your stories, because these are really, really important stories as people learn and they think about, where am I going? What am I doing? How am I going to get there? How did you get there? What did you do? So thank you so very much. And please give them a big round of applause.
You may have noticed that it started rather abruptly. That's because, unfortunately, my computer software that I was using to record it for some reason glitched and wiped out the first hour. But I figure you wouldn't have really wanted to listen to 2 hours straight on a podcast anyway, so I hope you got value out of what you did here. Again, if you would like to hear more sort of pure entrepreneurship podcasts as opposed to digital marketing and business strategy, by all means, just let me know, Tema, T-E-M-A, at Frank Online Marketing. And if you're interested instead in just hearing the more pure e-marketing and marketing strategy podcasts, just head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or my own website and look for the Frank Online Marketing Show. Our website, of course, is frankonlinemarketing.com. Chat with you next week. Bye.